Welcome to episode 5 of the Rice Pudding Poetry Podcast, a production of Rice Public Library in Kittery, Maine. I'm your host, Kimberly Green, and if you're new to our show, we offer a special welcome. From our makeshift studio, I like to imagine all of you taking a little break, feet up, eyes closed, a warming drink in your cupped hands, welcoming images and music as a kind of nourishment. It is good to rest, because we are struggling, all of us, to steer a good and true path in a deeply troubled time. So much has been broken, and so many are hurting. Just a week after the Biden-Harris inauguration, the powerful metaphor of kintsugi comes to mind, an art form in which broken fragments of a piece of precious pottery are repaired with gold lacquer. So the cracks are repaired, yes, but featured, not hidden. Our guest poet, James Cruz, has this lovely poem in his book, Bluebird. Kintsugi. Anyone who loves someone else already has a broken heart. It's the law. If you want that light to flood your body, you must expose the cracks through which it pours, since they are the source of your beauty and your strength. Think of the Japanese who fill the cracks in a ceramic bowl with pure gold, not only flaunting those so-called flaws, but also making each one a priceless vein through which light now moves. That's Kintsugi by James Cruz. Instead of gathering in the Victorian-era Roberts Room at Rice Library, we're recording this show from our homes throughout New England, using various devices, cables, and waves to reach you. And we like the sound effects of all those different devices, our voices, poems, and music, traveling across distances to meet here in an atmosphere of care and hope that we create together. Your generous reception completes our every gesture of sharing. We're delighted to welcome poet James Cruz, who is reading to us from his farm in Vermont. He's chosen gratitude for the theme of our show. You'll also hear readings by Maine and New Hampshire community readers Tom Berry, Carolyn Morse Finn, Brian Murphy, and Catherine Peebles, each of whom has selected a published poem that illuminates James's theme. We're fortunate, too, to have composer-guitarist Jonathan Booth with us. Some of you may know John from Maine Squeeze or the Rushmores, bands we love here in the Seacoast. John's a graduate of Berklee College of Music, and all the music you'll hear on this show is original. Let's kick things off with John's Back to Stay. Thank you. James Cruz lives with his husband on an organic farm in Vermont, and his poems have appeared in Plowshares, The New Republic, The New York Times, and have been reprinted in Ted Kooser's American Life in Poetry, as well as featured on Tracy K. Smith's podcast, The Slowdown. The poems he shares here with us reveal a life of deep appreciation for quiet, for the earth and her bounties, for the present moment, this light, this breath, now. Gratitude is, for James, a daily practice of awareness. We are so grateful to have you with us, James.
James Cruz, and I'm so thrilled and honored to be reading as part of the Rice Pudding podcast. I want to thank you all for spending your valuable time with me. The theme of my reading today will be gratitude, something I've been thinking a lot about during this pandemic year, and I've been asking myself the question, how can we be grateful no matter the circumstances? I wrote this first poem right after I moved to the East Coast and was living in Providence, Rhode Island. It was one of the worst winters we had in decades, and I knew hardly anyone in the city. I had many days of not feeling very thankful for my life at the time and wondering what I'd done to myself by choosing to move there. But so often, when I just stopped and paid attention to what was around me, when I wrote down my observations, I felt so much better and was able to be more present. This poem is Winter Morning. When I can no longer say thank you for this new day and the waking into it, for the cold scrape of the kitchen chair, and the ticking of the space heater glowing orange as it warms the floor near my feet. I know it's because I've been fooled again by the selfish, unruly man who lives in me and believes he deserves only safety and comfort. But if I pause as I do now and watch the street lights outside winking off one by one, like old men closing their cloudy eyes. If I listen to my tired neighbors slamming car doors hard against the morning and see the steaming coffee in their mugs, kissing their chapped lips as they sip and exhale each of their worries into the icy air around their faces, then I can remember this one life is a gift each of us was handed and told to open. Untie the bow and tear off the paper. Look inside and be grateful for whatever you find, even if it is only the scent of a tangerine that lingers on the fingers long after you've finished eating it. I wrote the next poem after this past election, when things still felt so uncertain and undecided. After feeling so much stress and worry for so long, my mindfulness practice brought me back to the moment at hand and the small pleasures I feel grateful for in my daily life. I was looking out the window, watching the oak leaves still clinging to the trees, looking at the light hitting our geranium, and I just felt so much better as a result of that, so grateful to be alive and really in contact with these small pleasures. So this poem is After Election Day. The sun still rose today, as it always does, striking the snaking arms of our geranium and lighting each wide leaf, the heat seeming to make them more pungent as I brushed past, lifting the window shades. Outside, slick brown leaves left clinging to oaks shone at dawn like sheets of hammered copper that rattled in the slightest wind. There were no tears for us here, though we shook our heads and asked each other, "What now?" as I poured the boiling water over coffee grounds in the filter and leaned closer to breathe in the fragrant steam, more grateful than ever for the pleasure of such small things. So this poem also makes me think of what a friend of mine has written recently, that he feels very lucky to be alive during these times, in part because he feels grateful for the small things, a message on the phone or a Zoom call with a friend. And I don't hear many people saying that they feel lucky to be alive right now, but his words were a good reminder. During this time when we can't yet safely touch each other, I've also found it incredibly healing to do some compassion practice with myself, touching my own heart, especially during the most difficult moments, and reminding myself that life is larger than what's happening right now. When I was first learning to meditate, it was hard for the cynic in me to do something like this, even to use the word compassion. And a good friend of mine now calls what we do the Oh Honey practice, bringing gentleness to our bodies so we can calm ourselves down. And that's based on this next poem, Self-Compassion. My friend and I snickered the first time we heard the meditation teacher, a grown man, call himself Honey, with a hand placed over his heart to illustrate how we too might become more gentle with ourselves and our runaway minds. It's been years since we sat with legs twisted on cushions, holding back our laughter. And today I found myself crouched on the floor again, not meditating exactly, just agreeing to be still, saying honey to myself each time I thought about my husband splayed on the couch with aching joints and fever from a tick bite. What if he never gets better? Or considered the mess of the last election, or remembered in just a few more minutes I'd have to climb down into the cellar and empty the bucket I left beneath a leaky pipe that can't be fixed until next week. How long do any of us have before the body begins to break down and empty its mysteries into the air? Oh, honey, I said, for once without a trace of irony or blush of shame, the touch of my own hand on my chest, like that of a stranger, oddly comforting, in spite of the facts. So I have to say also that that last line comes from a line from the great poet and farmer Wendell Berry, who says, "Be joyful, though you have considered the facts." It seems that since the pandemic, so many of us are now using this opportunity to focus on self-care, to shift how we frame our daily lives. I've been a driven overachiever for most of my life, so I'm now learning to take the time and space for my own needs and well-being, even when it feels unproductive or when it feels like I'm doing nothing. This next poem really helps to remind me to keep doing that. And in fact, I thought of it yesterday as I lay on the couch just listening to some quiet meditation music, sipping a cup of tea, and quote-unquote doing nothing, not being productive, but feeling that I was actually doing myself a great favor. This poem is called Self-Care. Some days it feels like a foreign language I'm asked to practice, with new words for happiness, work, and love. I'm still learning how to say a cup of tea for no reason, what to call the extra honey I drizzle in, how to label the relentless urge to do more and more as useless, and how to translate the heart's pounding message when it comes, enough, enough. This morning, I search for words to capture the glimmering sun as it lifts above the mountains, clouds already closing in as fat droplets of rain darken the deck. I'm learning to call this stillness self-care too, just standing here as goldfinches scatter up from around the feeder, like broken pieces of bright yellow stained glass reassembling in the sheltering arms of a maple. This next poem comes very much from a moment of gratitude I had a few summers ago. My husband is a farmer, and we live on part of an organic farm here in southern Vermont. I wrote this after walking out in the fields with him and picking the salt and pepper cucumbers that I describe here. They're always a sign of summer and all the salads to come for us, and I've never seen them for sale in grocery stores, but we love to grow them here. At the time, I felt this intense sweep of gratitude for my life and all the decisions I had made that led me to this moment with him, here in a place that I never expected to end up. I grew up in the Midwest and have lived all across the country, so thinking that I might live in rural Vermont someday never really crossed my mind, and yet it felt so right at this moment. This poem is called More. I know it's summer when we wade out into the field and pick these crisp wonders, tiny cucumbers bleached of their green as if they've already seen too much of this dazzling light and can take no more. We eat them sprinkled with salt and pepper as their name suggests, crunching through flesh so sweet it's like that of a melon. I've never seen them for sale in grocery stores, but they grow here in this soil, out of which my husband could coax almost anything with his sure touch and sharp attention. He snaps them from stems with flowers still shriveled at the ends, then hands them to me like the gifts they are, and I take each one into the bowl of my hands, a wandering monk finally at home among rolling mountains, swaddled in trees and stones heaved up as round as eggs from sandy loam. So much already alive between us, so many blessings threading our days like the gold of sun, yet here I stand, holding this bounty, begging for more. So this is another poem about my husband Brad and the intimate way that he relates to the natural world as a farmer. I've often felt envious of the way he seems so connected to the land we live on, cared for and tended to by the Abnaki peoples for 12,000 years before us. This poem is called Down to Earth. The heart of a farmer is made of muscle and clay that aches for return to earth. And when the sky releases a steady rain, massaging each row of sprouted beans, my husband leans out of the car window and opens his hand to hold that water for a single instant. His heart now beating in sync with rain, seeping through layers to kiss the roots of every plant alive on this living, breathing planet on whose back we were granted permission to live for a limited time. And this is the last poem I'd like to share with you. It's another summer poem, and it's about one of those days when you feel so fully present and grateful that you don't need anything outside of yourself to make the moment more whole or complete. No drink or drugs or wishing for things to be other than the way they are. For me, this is the essence of gratitude, finding a way to embrace all the simple, beautiful things in our lives as they are right now, even when things feel challenging, fearful, or uncertain. This poem is called Clearly. To see clearly, not needing a drink or pill or puff of any pipe, to know I'm alive, to come home, peel off my sandals, and step onto the cool tile floor, needing only the rush of water over strawberries I've picked myself, and then a knife to trim the dusty green heads from each one, to watch them gleam cleanly in a colander in a patch of sun near the sink.
You have graced us, James, with your presence, your wisdom, and your voice. Thank you so much for joining us and for sharing your hope-giving poems. Thank you, John, for your tunes Take a Minute and Close My Eyes and Almost Home, the lovely melodies that framed James's reading. James Cruz is the author of 4 collections of poetry, The Book of What Stays, Telling My Father, Bluebird, and Every Waking Moment. He's also the editor of 2 anthologies, Healing the Divide, Poems of Kindness and Connection, and How to Love the World, Poems of Gratitude and Hope. You can order his books at River Run Bookstore in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. Call the owner, Tom Holbrook, at 603-431-2100, or go to the website at riverrunbookstore.com. The feast continues now with our 4 community readers, each of whom has selected a poem that speaks in a unique way to James's theme of gratitude. I was struck, listening to the recordings as they came to us, by what they hint at, that gratitude is sometimes a pathway out of devastation, a way of bearing what hurts us, body and soul. These are the subtle threads woven through these lovely readings.
Barry, and I'm recording this from snowy South Berwick, Maine. I was honored and happy to be invited to be a community reader, and more so when I saw featured reader James Cruz had selected gratitude as a theme for the show. I started to practice my gratitude habit about 5.5 years ago when I was facing some significant health challenges, and I've made it a daily practice since. As I was doing some background prep for the show, I noted that James lives in Vermont. Vermont is spectacular for many reasons, but the one closest to my heart is that it's the home of the Long Trail, a 270-mile hiking trail that runs up the spine of the Green Mountains from Massachusetts to Canada. I thru-hiked the trail about a half a lifetime ago, hiking only miles from where James now lives. I made many wonderful memories on that hike, and I am so deeply grateful for that experience. One memory I always come back to is a close encounter with a moose that simply astounded me. For the Yearling Moose by Jane Vacante. But there is always the patch of tasty weeds at the mailbox when you tire of feeding on the far fields by the pond. I stand at the picture window, eye to the spotting scope, scanning the autumn landscape that disguises you like a tweed blanket. It's strange to find such creature love in me and concern when you roam beyond eyesight. You could head to Canada, 100 miles from here. There they'd call you Jolie Laide, pretty ugly, your profile lumpy like a camel's cousin, brown eyes serious as I saw that night of the full moon. You stood in starlight by the mailbox, turned your gaze to me, inquiring as I hesitated to leave the just parked car. Then you grazed again.
Finn, and I'm recording in my home in Nottingham, New Hampshire, where I've lived for almost 33 years. The poem I've chosen for this show is by Jamaican-American writer and poet Claude McKay. who became known as the leading member of the Harlem Renaissance and influenced a generation of Black authors, including James Baldwin and Richard Wright. This poem seems timeless in its expression of gratitude for the day after a pouring rain when all is transformed to light. Because I live in the woods in Nottingham, I love this poem. New England can be harsh sometimes, but this poem sets my mind and my spirit at ease. Summer morn in New Hampshire. All yesterday it poured, and all night long I could not sleep. The rain, unceasing beat, upon the shingled roof like a weird song, upon the grass like running children's feet. And down the mountains, by the dark cloud kissed, like a strange shape in filmy veiling dressed, slid slowly, silently, the wraith-like mist, and nestled soft against the earth's wet breast. But lo, there was a miracle at dawn. The still air stirred at the touch of a faint breeze. The sun, a sheet of gold, bequeathed the lawn. The songsters twittered in the rustling trees. And all things were transfigured in the day. But me, whom radiant beauty could not move. For you, more wonderful, were far away, and I was blind with hunger for your love.
Hello, poetry lovers. My name is Brian Murphy, and I join you from Portsmouth, New Hampshire. I want to share with you the voice of a Black woman, Frances Ellen Watkins Harper, who was born in Baltimore in 1825. Born free, she used her voice in a lifelong pursuit of justice. Themes of abolitionism, women's suffrage, and education for women were at the core of her writing throughout her prolific career. Themes of gratitude might not be on the surface of her work, but having lived through the year 2020, an election year when voting rights have been strained as much as ever, I read her poem about the 15th Amendment, and a deep gratitude grows in me for having found this luminous voice. The 15th Amendment prohibits denying citizens the right to vote based on race, color, or, quote, previous condition of servitude. It gave Black men the right to vote, but not Black women, or any women. And yet Harper persisted in her life of activism, with teaching and public speaking engagements, but died in Philadelphia in 1911, 9 years before the 19th Amendment gave women the right to vote. While a year like 2020 leaves me with doubt and frustration about justice for all, Harper's poetry fills me with gratitude for her work and for the work of so many who have shaped my mind and my heart in such a way that I am capable of feeling such doubts and frustrations. Her poem entitled 15th Amendment is, to me, a celebration of what is, of a truth that has always been, which once again rises in triumph over slavery's storm of fire and blood. Here is 15th Amendment, by Frances Ellen Watkins Harper. Beneath the burden of our joy, tremble, O wires from east to west, fashion with words your tongues of fire to tell the nation's high behest. Outstrip the winds and leave behind the murmur of the restless waves, nor tarry with your glorious news amid the ocean's coral caves. Ring out your sweetest chimes, ye bells that call to praise. Let every heart with gladness thrill, and songs of joyful triumph raise. Shake off the dust, O rising race, crowned as a brother and a man. Justice today asserts her claim, and from thy brow fades out the ban. With freedom's chrism upon thy head, her precious ensign in thy hand, go place thy once despised name amid the noblest of the land. A ransomed race, give God the praise, who let thee through a crimson sea, and mid the storm of fire and blood, turned out the war cloud's light to thee.
My name is Catherine Peebles, and I live in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. I'm reading my poem from a little room that's become my office during the pandemic. And I'm going to read Emily Dickinson's Some Keep the Sabbath Going to Church. I've been kept away from church, like everyone else, for a long time. Well, longer in my case, since I had to stop going anywhere back in June of 2019, thanks to a diagnosis. But having to be away from gatherings on Sunday has at least reminded me of the way that church, so-called, is bestowed on us through the natural world again and again, from earliest childhood through old age, through belief and loss of faith. I'm grateful for that. The way this poem opens up at the end, to the whole of one's life as the heavenly experience day by day, is especially helpful to me now. Some Keep the Sabbath Going to Church by Emily Dickinson. Some keep the Sabbath going to church. I keep it staying home, with a bobolink for a chorister and an orchard for a dome. Some keep the Sabbath in surplice. I just wear my wings, and instead of tolling the bell for church, our little sexton sings. God preaches, a noted clergyman, and the sermon is never long. So instead of getting to heaven at last, I'm going all along.
Thank you, Tom Berry, Carolyn Morse Finn, Brian Murphy, and Catherine Peebles. And thank you, John, for your tunes It's All Right, C Major Tidbit, Close My Eyes, Canterbury Tune, and Evolution Haiku. Please join us for Episode 6 on March 18th, when we will welcome back Maine Poet Laureate Betsy Scholl. This episode of Rice Pudding has been, as always, supported by Rice Libraries Lee Perkins and Greta Evans, and by the generous skill and patience of production engineer Douglas Green. Thanks, too, to Sophie Green for her icon illustration and to Matt Clodier for his recording guidelines. Our theme music is Pussy Hat, composed by Kent Allen and Joyce Anderson. I'm Kimberly Green, and I'm most grateful for you, dear listeners, near and far. Take good care, everyone. Keep vivid in your minds the great gift and blessing of human touch, which comes for now in the form of all our voices. It will be good to be together again on March 18th. Bye for now.